There's some sound. Yep.
I can hear you.
Good. Good. All working. Turn
Yeah.
this a little bit. That way. Here we are. So we got. Okay.
We're spot on 5 o'clock for us, so let's just give 1 or 2 more minutes and we'll allow some others to come in. Hello, Harry. Oh, look at you
Hello.
looking all, you look like you're about to go gangster out on the streets of wherever you are in Holland. Hello, Mariangela.
Okay. Yeah, a couple of
Yeah.
okay. So, let me come back. Sounds like sounds back already.
What's that? We're all, me and you were just muttering to ourselves, like, oh,
Yep. Okay. You hear the muttering, it's all right. At least my microphone's working. Right height, that's all right. How many have we got so far? Not bad. Okay.
The link was not working okay. I tried a couple of times and then it said that you are already in another meeting.
Yeah, I noticed that when I logged on, I noticed there was another meeting running, so I ended it.
Okay.
I'm not
That's
sure
a
what
weird one.
happened there.
That's happened a few times, actually. If you wait a minute, it comes in anyway. It seems to be doing that lately.
Yeah.
If you wait a minute, it'll actually let you in.
Okay.
Weird thing on Zoom going on.
I'm in now, so
You're
that's
in.
all that matters.
That's
Let all the
amazing.
people come in. That's all that matters. Yeah, all the people have to come in who wants. Good, good, good. I tried joining the latest email, but it was on another region. Hi, hi everyone. Hi. I wonder if the incorrect link was sent out.
No, I think it's just what Zoom's been doing lately. Because it happened in a couple of calls before. You know,
No,
people.
Veronica is saying that she tried to join the link using the link in the email and it took her to them. Oh no, it would have been no, it was the right link, but you're right, Peter. Zoom would have opened up the incorrect meeting.
Yeah. It's been doing that lately. Only this time
Yeah.
it tries to get on, it says there's another meeting. But if you wait a minute, it lets you in anyway. So I don't know why this is. Still thinks there's another meeting going on. Well, there was this time,
I was like, hey, hang on a minute, what's going on there?
know.
That's not what we're doing today, that's tomorrow. All right, well, look, it's 3 minutes past. We've got
Okay.
lots of announcements to do. So, Peter, how where would you like to get going?
Yep, we can get going. We've got enough to start with, so if somebody's joined to let us find, we can start the announcements anyway.
Do we have, I'm just checking, do we have admin in?
Can't see. Nope. Doesn't matter.
All right. Okay, well, we are recording. Yes, wonderful. We are indeed. Okay, so good. Wherever you are, morning, afternoon, everybody, welcome to March. Wow, it's March. How about
Yeah.
The last month of the first quarter of the year. So we've got a lot going on. There's a lot of activity happening in the world right now, and including on Peter's calendar. So I'm going to tell you a few things that are going on that you can all join in with as and where you choose. Today, Peter will be talking to you about the power of myth. And if you have not yet read the article, I will add the link once I stop talking. Can't do two things at once. I'll add the link to the article. And that's what Peter will be talking about today in today's Q&A. And then tomorrow in the student Q&A, Peter, how will you be expanding on this topic?
It's more for the magical techniques, those who've done some magic courses about to actually how to use to tap into myths, change them and harness them and actually get what you want out of them, basically. Use them to shape your life.
Great. So if you are a student of Peter's in any way, shape, or form, then you're welcome to join us tomorrow, same time as we are right now, where we'll talk on the students' Q&A. And then after today's Q&A, we have today's workshop, which is making magic potions. So I hope everybody is really excited for that one. Peter will be showing us, literally showing us how to make magic potions. Don't worry, you don't need to bring along anything. It's an observe only, but you will get full list of ingredients, etc., for you to be able to go away and make your own. So if you are a magical membership member, then you can come along to the workshop after this. If you are not, you can join us still just for a one-off if you want to learn how to make magical potions from Peter. And again, the link will go in the chat so you can join us for that topic. I can't remember off the top of my head what comes next month in the thing. So I'm going to find that out and I'll let everybody know at the end of the
Next month dealing with ancestors.
is dealing with ancestors. Wonderful. Thank you very much. And so next month we're going to be dealing with ancestors in the workshop series. Now, Peter's going to be shifting around the globe over the next couple of weeks as well. So coming up, he has his trip to Holland, where he will be hosted by Gerry. Give us a wave, Gerry. Let everyone know who you are. So Peter will be going to Holland and he will be facilitating two courses in Holland. He will be doing in-person dragon magic and he will be doing in-person advanced dragon magic. So if any of you are in Holland and you would like to join, then please do get in contact with either Peter or Gerry. And if any of you are not in Holland, but you wouldn't mind taking the trip across the seas or through the air and to go and meet Peter and to take part in his courses, of course, you are welcome to join. Again, links will go in the chat so you can go straight to the page. The other couple of things that we need to talk about next weekend, we've got a couple of additional exciting things for you coming up. First announcement right here. No one knows about it yet. So we're going to be writing about it in the week. But there are two additional webinars happening for all of you next weekend, one on Saturday and one on Sunday. And I'm really excited about one of them. Well, actually, no, I'm excited about both of them because I live in Thailand. But on the first one on Saturday, Peter, can you please tell everybody what you are going to be doing on Saturday that is so special for everybody that they're going to want to
It's going
join?
to be a free manifestation masterclass. I'm going to actually take you through the steps of actually manifesting what you want, looking how to get beyond all the blockages, how to discreate things that are in the way, how to understand future causality, how to let in the way for the future. I'm going through all the steps which actually make it work, make sure there are no blocks. So you'll be able to do manifestation really easily. When it's actually mastered, it only takes 33 seconds to manifest anything. And once you've got this down, you'll be manifesting all your dreams.
So
We all
if
know
you're
it works, but it's just getting it to work properly because there's a lot of information out there which is not complete. This will actually get you to really succeed at your manifestation.
And I think that's the important thing, isn't there? There is a lot of information about law of attraction and, manifesting your dreams and manifesting your soulmates and this and that, right? But really, how do you really, really do it so that it works specifically for everything that you want? And I'm really excited to watch. I don't even want to co-facilitate, Peter. I just want to sit and listen.
It's fine. That's
So that is going to be happening on Saturday. So if you are sitting there thinking, oh, I wish I could go to Holland, or oh, I wish I could do this, or I wish I could do that. You absolutely can come along to the manifestation masterclass to learn
manifest
how to manifest it. And if you've been wondering, oh, how do I manifest everything, the life of my dreams? Well, there you go. You've just manifested the manifestation masterclass. So
That's a
please come
start.
along and join Peter and myself, where, well, I ain't going to be talking, he is, where he's going to be teaching you step by step How to Manifest Everything That You Want in Your Life. And that's happening on Saturday, as I said. And the time is, sorry, I haven't done the conversions, but it's going to be happening at 7:30 my time, 7:30 p.m., which is in 2.5 hours, which means that's probably, what, 10, 11, 12, 12:30, I think, UK time.
That would
I
be,
think,
yes, 12:30, yeah.
12:30 UK time on Saturday the 11th. And then on Sunday the 12th, following on from this, Peter and myself are going to be holding a Q&A session for anyone who is interested in coming to the in-person point holding session that we're holding here in Thailand in May. So if you've got any questions whatsoever about why you should come to Thailand, why you should come and do point holding in person, then Sunday is the time for you to bring all of your questions. Carrie, where am I going to sleep? You know, what will I eat? How do I, what if I can't speak Thai? You can bring any of your questions to this Q&A and we will answer them for you and hopefully help you get here to Thailand. Peter, what would you like to say about the Q&A session?
You've said it really, is to answer any of your questions. So it all depends on what questions you bring. It can be about the practicalities of it, about what's on the course, how it's going to work for you. The benefits of doing this is separate from the actual online courses, you know, all the differences, anything you want.
And can you just say a word or two, because you wrote an article recently, didn't you, about the importance of the actual point holding in a group?
Yeah. Although the online course works really well, and that's the start of it, so you have to get that first. Of course, there are benefits of being in person. One thing, I'm there. So I can actually be right there guiding you through it, and can read your iris and see where the problems are. You better learn to read the iris as well. You can actually, I can show you what I see people's irises, so you learn to read very quickly and learn to understand what the signs look like. You better actually see the changes there, because the iris changes straight away after the point holding, something you never seen in other therapy. You better actually watch the changes happening in the body. So you better see the power of this in action. And of course, the energy is amplified when we're all working together, and it's this intense. Whole group working together every day, you know, doing the point holding all day, it's going to really build up. And because you've got a few weeks to do it, over those few weeks, you know, go more into your process and really change everything. All the deeper stuff you wouldn't reach otherwise. So, yeah, it's a lot of information in that article you can read about, but also if there are any more questions afterwards, we can talk further.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also important to know that you don't need to come for the full 3 weeks. You can come for 1 week, 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But if you come for anything less than three, just be aware that obviously you'll do the endocrine glands in the first week. The second week, we focus on the spine. And then in the third week, we get to the cranium. And it has to be done in succession. But you can choose how many weeks you would like to attend for. Again, I'll put the article in the link when I stop talking. So the other thing that we need to talk about is Egyptian magic, Peter, because you've got an early bird special happening right now.
Right, yes. We've just upgraded the kind of Egyptian magic course, so it's more in a teachable format again, so easy to follow. And so it's going out right now with a discount for the first couple of days. So if you're interested in that one, now's the time. Egyptian magic, it's really powerful. It's been used for so long. Egyptian magic was at the root of civilization. You know, they used it all the time then for their modern problems as well. You see, things of civilization and then are still used now. Things like dealing with courts, legal issues, building business, getting things established, all those things. Egyptian magic deals with all those things, and this is why it's used so much these days, why all the kind of big leaders and the kind of secret societies tend to use it. It's a really powerful method as well, and I've tapped into them. Roots of it, actually taken something which the rest hadn't got, which I'll talk about. Because basically the gods have their rules, and certain hieroglyphs that can be used to actually bypass some of the kind of outer barriers and actually get the magic to where it should be.
And this course is currently on early bird for the next 3 days until Tuesday. So at full price, it's $177. And right now you can get it for $147. So if you're interested in Egyptian magic, and it's a lovely course, I really enjoyed transferring that one. If you're interested in taking the Egyptian magic, then please do take advantage of that discount. That's going to be until midnight on Tuesday. Obviously, it depends where you are in the world as to what time that is for you. But I do believe that is midnight in the UK. All right, that's a lot of stuff. I'm going to carry on putting links in the chat whilst Peter is talking to you about the power of myths. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to me. And I will now pass over and I'll spotlight you, Peter.
Okay, the spotlight. There we go. So, hello. So, hopefully, with the the kind of blog I wrote on myths. I'm going to take it a bit further now. You see, people often confuse as whether these mythical beings are real. Well, actually, is anything real? We all know this world is illusion anyway. You know, the mind creates everything out of imagination. This whole world is imagined. Even science is proving that these days. Because it's shown in physics, for instance, that nothing is there until it's observed. And very much our beliefs, our structure, our experience is shaping our present experience. Now, mythology is basically responds to different parts of the mind than we're used to using. Beyond the conscious mind, we also understand we have a subconscious, where our dreams come from, our beliefs are stored. In magic, we learn to understand different levels of mind. Beyond the subconscious, we get to what we call the mythical mind. So to understand how it works, you need to understand the levels of the mind. You know, the subconscious responds to logical things. The subconscious doesn't so much. When you really go to the subconscious, you deal with symbolism and emotion. When you get into the mythical mind, it's a different kind of symbolism. It goes deeper. Things are more personified. It's symbolic in a way. That's where we'll get into the topic of what we call telepathic imagery. The different positions of the body and how they're shaped give different messages up to the unconscious about what power is coming through there. Simple examples, take some of the Egyptian figures. These are very good for that. If you look at how they work, you've got a certain animal head, you've got a human body, different colors of clothing. Even the feet have different sizes if you look carefully. And what they're holding in the hand changes. Each section is actually a different aspect of their power. Big feet are very earthed. It's more grounded power. It's used for physical things on the earth. Things like money, physical health, strength. The head is about consciousness. You look at something like Sekhmet, who's got a lion's head. You think it's an aggressive one because lions were seen as pretty vicious killers then. People afraid of them. And, you know, when you live in that kind of society and the lions are out there, you have to try and protect yourself from it. You're seen as something really dangerous, very, you know, destructive as well. So Sekhmet being the destroyer, the lion's head is much representative of that consciousness. Kind of staff in the hand with its shape, a little bit crooked bit on the end, is reflecting the angle of how power comes in. She had big feet, basically, and also large breasts, which shows that the mother society is feminine force. Now, what that means in terms of magic, the feminine is actually the more creative, imaginative, intuitive, with the masculine tends to be the will, the intellect, the focus. Feminine force is very important in magic because magic is very much used by imagination and symbolism and so on. It's more feminine than masculine. So quite often the most powerful beings are actually human feminine. We actually look at energy coming down from source. It's not really masculine or feminine. It's not shaped. It's an energy that has a certain direction, a certain flavor. You see, when the first creator, which is pure potential, wants to start manifesting, it first goes into the 50 archetypes. Archetypal energy is not yet shaped. They're being conceptual. But it's starting to give direction to how this energy could act. So if these energies are ready actually to do something. So ideas first is infinite potential, but there's actually no idea of what you're going to do with it. Next level is creating energies which could actually do something, such as destroy, create, make things more, protect, preserve. If you look at the earlier myths, for instance, of the creator, for instance, you got the trinity of, say, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, same as a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. You got a creator, a preserver, what protector, and a kind of purifying essence. Let's look further. There's actually 50 archetypes, first of all. It's interesting how we get to 50, because physics actually agrees with this if you look at it. And many myths also carry this. There's 50 heads on the first hound of hell. They couldn't actually draw 50 on a vase, so they actually shortened it to three, but actually originally several of us had 50 heads. The 50 snakes on Medusa's head. The 50 angels in our heavenly hierarchy. The 50 first demons in the demonic hierarchy as well. These are all reflections of the different levels of archetypal energy. Now, when you start looking at the archetypal energy, first of all, it's preconceptual. We haven't given it shape yet. A good way to understand how they work is by looking at the major arcana of the tarot. See, when we look at those pictures, we don't actually expect them to be a real being. We know it symbolizes something. This is actually conceptualizing something which is preconceptual. That's the first idea of what an archetypal energy is like. The myth then starts to expanding upon this by giving it form. See, as creation works, we grow from, first of all, from the pure energy through the archetypes. We come then to the imaginal realm. We come to function, which then creates form before it comes physically manifest on the earth. So the energies which actually have a function, actually they want to do something, also then start to have form. But these forms are symbolic. So basically, all these gods act as if they're real. Because the mythical mind, the unconscious, works that symbolism. It's a vehicle, a conduit for those energies, a way of directing it, a way of inviting into your life to make certain changes. Now, obviously, this requires you to actually understand which energy is going to make that kind of change. The whole idea of actually just praying to one God for everything is actually a bit limited. I mean, how do you get it to go into that particular direction? That's why many archetypes. When you look at all the different religions, they all have many aspects of God. Some prefer to stick to one God, but if you look at it, they have many names of God or many angels under God and so on, because that energy wants to divide into different functions. I find, for instance, the Egyptian and Hindu ones are the easiest ones to work this way because that's obvious. In the Hindu, for instance, Lakshmi creates abundance. If you want to create wealth, that's one to work with. There's already an archetype for it. There's an energy here which tends to create wealth. If you're working with that one, you've got its symbolism there. It's got a certain head, sits in the lotus, you've got the wealth, the money all around it, all the kind of typical symbolism which represents wealth. And that's a conduit for wealth energy to come in. So it's a powerful symbol to gather the energy of wealth. Now, where the myths come in, it's more than symbolism, they act as if they're real. Their personality. And this is because it's linked to your own emotional body. When we go from subconscious, from the conscious to the subconscious, then to the mythical, we're passing through our emotional and imaginative level. Your emotions and how you relate to these things, they're quite a big effect. So therefore, you've got to treat them with respect. How would you want to be treated? If you call, you know, a certain being in, there's going to be emotion in that call. This would be respect to how you treat them, how you welcome them in. You don't see them as just an object or a technique. You give them personality in it because there's an emotional content. So this is why it works this way. Something as Crowley said, whether or not the gods exist is not an issue. The universe behaves as if they do. That the most effective way to work them is to see them as real. A modern intellectual mind likes to say, no, this is can't be real. It's all this, you know, symbolism going on and how things working mechanically. But actually, as I said, nothing is real. When you look at the hierarchy of this, of how it is, pure consciousness is what's real. Everything is created by its imagination. Therefore, this lowest level of manifestation is actually the least real. So how can we say we are real and this world is real, but say the gods are not real? They're not as real as pure awareness, but they're more real than this world. So you understand magic more when you understand the value of the imagination and observation. Consciousness is the root of everything. That creates everything else. Imagination is the main tool of creation. Emotional content is a big part of it as well. So we understand this when we actually do things like creative visualization. You use your imagination, you put emotion into it. But what people forget to do is actually bring that into the myth as well. The mythology, by using archetypal energies, can greatly increase what you can do by creative visualization alone, but it still requires the emotional content and imagination. So you bring in these beings, their very nature inspires certain emotions, whether they look beautiful or whether they look fierce or frightening, they're all part of some emotional content, and they actually fit perfectly into your whole creative process, the whole process of magic. So the whole idea of mythology then was actually it wasn't just for to write little stories. Interesting how people call a lot of things old wives' tales, but what does that mean? You might consider them quite differently if you call them crone's tales or wise woman's tales. This has all been part of the loss of magic, which also goes with the loss of the feminine. While they actually recognize the wisdom and power of a crone, they're trying to say, oh no, these old women can't have children anymore, they're good for doing is telling stories to children, and they forget the power of the stories. Mythology was a technique of magic. Many things were which we've forgotten. Even many of the stories told to children had the roots of magic in them. Very simple example, remember from my own childhood, when you're learning magic, we often learn to relate the fingers to elements, so you actually understand how to use mudras to invoke elemental forces. And do you know how you remember them? Remember the story of the little piggies? This little piggy went to market was air. This little piggy stayed at home was earth. This little piggy had roast beef. Spirit provides everything. Little Harry had none. Fire burnt everything away. This little piggy went all the way home. It was water. It flows back to the source.
Peter, sorry, I'm going to ask you to slow down and to maybe repeat that and kind of
expand, because not everyone might not know the story of the three little piggies either.
Don't you remember that when you're a child?
I certainly do, but maybe other people may not.
You used to play little games with children, where you go on the fingers, this little piggy went to market, this little piggy stayed at home. This is always a teaching magic. Went to market is going out. This is the Mercury air force, or the air force, it's movement. Stay at home is earth, it's solid, stable. This little piggy had roast beef, you know, this is the providing, make sure you got food, it's the spirit, it's the source. This little piggy had none, it's because fire consumes everything. And this little piggy went wee all the way home was water. So this little story is fixing the mind, which finger controls which element. When people forget that, they actually make mistakes. People often try and do it in order. Okay, we've got air, fire, water. No, it doesn't work that way. Fingers, by their nature, by the meridians going through them, are linked to certain elemental forces. If you get them wrong, it doesn't work so well. I've seen people in different systems putting in order, just going air, fire, water, you know, all the other way around. Actually, that's not how the fingers work. It's all mixed up. You look at it, air, earth, spirit, fire, water. It's not necessarily in the order people think they are. Because it's not about a logical order. It's about the nature of the meridians, energies going through fingers. It's what mudras are all about. You see, a lot in Hindu methods, they use mudras. Yeah, because the different positions of fingers create different energy circuits. It is not just some kind of rational system of symbology. It's about how energy actually works in the body. It's quite complex. The unconscious is more complex. So quite often people begin magic, they try and create symbolism, like a talisman and things, which speaks well to the subconscious mind. They don't necessarily understand the deeper symbology of the methodology, which contains things we can't possibly understand rationally, because the complex workings of energy in the body and how the subconscious minds and the meridians and everything is a very complex system that isn't just subject to your belief. Like meridians, we all have them, whether you know, it's not just Chinese open meridians, because they've invented this system. We all have them. Say with the hieroglyphs in Egypt. The shapes of hieroglyphs are found in their brains, in the shapes of neuropeptide chains and also neural pathways. It doesn't matter what culture you're from, you'd have to be Egyptian, we've all got those in their brain. Therefore, when you use hieroglyphs, it's triggering certain templates in the brain, which open up certain aspects of consciousness. So a lot of these things which are actually built into us in the unconscious are way beyond rational understanding. We only begin to discover now when scientists find these little shapes in the brain and so on. So mythology, in its very nature, has a kind of a power that's way beyond the rational mind. You can create your own symbolism, which is fair enough, but it's not as deep as myth. Sometimes you look at these ancient grimoires with these old signs, you wonder what it's all about. And yes, because the symbolism there is beyond what you create rationally now. Some of it is. It's like, you know, you can create your own symbolism. There are methods of sigil creation, the methods of some of the Osterlund's fair called atavistic resurgence. We actually throw an idea in and you mix letters around and make a little shape out of them and things. There's various ways of creating symbols of magic. But mythology takes another level altogether. It is a deep language of the unconscious, which opens up those magical potentials in us. Was it all about magic? Well, in the beginning, magic wasn't separate from every rest of life. It was part of everything. Somehow it's got shut away and we see it as a separate box, therefore we have different bases of mind to deal with it. When everything flowed together, when we're surviving, a lot of things we used to survival in those days are now very rare now. The kind of properties you're trying to develop now, what's actually it's survival, we use them all the time. It's used to intuition, had to be in touch with the animals, the plants, the trees, everything. Where do you think the understanding of medicine came from? How do you know which plant to take when you're ill, which one's going to kill you? There was a natural connection. So our intuition, our connection to nature, our mythology, was all working together, all growing together. People associated with plants, the sun, moon, all of the nature with different deities, because they're conscious. There's certain energy comes through them, and those energies would be symbolized through telesomatic imagery into a form which means something to our unconscious. So that gives you an idea of why mythology is important. It's a good time to actually look at the Egyptian magic and to put it out now, because obviously this is one area we see these kind of images very clearly used hieroglyphs. The images are perfect demonstrations of this talismanic imagery, because they're simple in the Egyptian form. So there's a head, body, feet, you know, simple sections. Hindu ones far more complex. You take like Kali, for instance, all the arms, everything means something different. The disc she carries is a rotating disc of time, and everything she carries, every part of her, has some deep meaning. You have to meditate a long time to get. with Egyptian images, a symbol, manifestations of power, of certain directions this energy takes, function. Therefore, they are very easy choices to actually get something done. So the important thing to take away from this is understand that we have to treat them as real. They are real on their own level because, you know, what we consider to be real is very limited. Because people are so attached to the physical world more than everything else. They think, you know, anything you imagine isn't real. But actually, this is created out of imagination too. Everything is. So what's the difference? So in dealing with mythology, even though we can look at the symbolic way by which it works, it's still real. Once energy manifests, there's consciousness there too. Everything is conscious. Because the consciousness creates everything, is in everything. So therefore, the deities don't fit with our kind of rational, modern sense of seeing things. It's still a very real power. And bringing those into kind of your magic can make a huge difference. I've had people arguing over this in magic and saying, well, why do you use this? This is, you know, this is imagination, all that. Well, yes, everything's imagination. The ones who are actually not using it, the ones who are not getting results. Want to be too rational, not getting involved in their magic. When we go into the mythical mind, you're going beyond the rational mind, remember, using different aspects of mind to get the job done. There's a lot which rational mind doesn't do. Even though modern science has become so limited this way, scientists are usually any more expensive than how they look at things. They don't conclude anything without the proof. They don't conclude that something doesn't exist because you haven't seen it yet. Yet a lot of people are seeing things that way. And there was a simple saying, I can't remember who said it, that if you only tool the hammer, you're going to see the universe in terms of nails. In the same way, if you only tool is rational mind, you think the universe is a rational place. It actually isn't. It's far more magical than people realize. That's why there's so much happens, which is beyond logic and reason, where nothing makes any sense anymore. It's not logical at all. When you actually understand magic, you actually see how it all works. And a big part of that is to start actually taking the myths more seriously. These deities have an impact. It's not always good. If you look at some of the old stories of how they did magic, quite often it was actually to stop the gods from interfering rather than actually make them do anything. Because they saw a lot of these natural forces and disasters and things coming from gods. You know, it could make you a plague come or make your crops fail or whatever. And they saw it as all as disasters coming from gods. Therefore, they had to appease the gods not to interfere. On the other hand, you had to bring the gods in to actually do something good. Understanding which forces are positive, which ones are not so good that you don't want, and knowing how to work with both, appease some so they don't bother you at the right times, and draw others in so you have the benefits. These are all natural energies which we do have the ability to shape, because we're all one with it. This is what is actually within our history of our survival. We've used these forces before to survive. Nature, the universe does respond to us. That's the whole purpose of magic. Oh, any questions?
So, as I have said, everyone, if you have a question for Peter regarding this topic or any other topic, that is, then please do start to type them and put them into the chat. If you had pre-submitted a question, I don't think I've seen any. No, I know I haven't seen any. So if you have pre-submitted one, then please do retype that because I haven't seen it. But we have one question. I can get lost in different systems and deities. If someone wants to achieve enlightenment in a lifetime, I hear Vajrayana Buddhism is a good system. Do you have any suggestions?
Actually, it is about finding what works for you. You see, we all have different ancestry. And it gets mixed up these days. Very few people for these days is coming from one culture. Things got so mixed up now. We have several things in ancestry, and these will have potential. And there are many things which can suddenly awaken in you. It's about actually simply following your heart and seeing what draws you. You've got to feel a connection to something. Sometimes you hear a myth that it's true, it means something to you, it stimulates your emotions, others don't mean much. So obviously you use the ones which are alive for you. Don't go by whether you think something ought to work because somebody said it does. It's very personal. The ones which work for you are the ones which really trigger those emotions, which actually give you a sense of something really there. And even if you rational mind is saying it's not there, there's some feeling coming through you which says, yes, it is. Sometimes it's because something scares you. You know, it's like, yes, each myth all has its dark side. You find some people are not so scared of the devil, for instance, this Christian myth doesn't bother them, but then some dark being from another culture suddenly will scare them. Why is that? some cultures more life in you than others. So go by your own feeling, really. What do you really feel connected to? Sometimes you don't know that either until you start working with them. It becomes a dream. Traditionally, we'd open to our deities through dream, particularly in Egyptian magic. There are prayers you do before going to sleep so that deity visits you in dream. Thing is, it might not actually be an Egyptian deity. When I did that, it was Kali who came in. And it's funny how Kali came, because I wasn't actually into the Indian myths at all at that time, but she kept coming. So you never know when you start, you know, you don't know what's going to come. It's not always what's in your rational mind, what you think it would be. Kali came to me in three ways. She came to me when I was doing Egyptian magic. She came to me when I was in the Amazon jungle doing ayahuasca. Like all my songs came in Sanskrit, would be the Biosa Gindes and Quechuan. And she came to me in voodoo, when she possessed me within the voodoo rituals too. So, you know, by that time, she told me three times, here's the one. So then I had to respond.
Thank you very much. What are deeper levels than the mythological level?
Well, different ways of labeling them. Mythical mind is the safest one to work with. Below that, we enter the abyss, which is an interesting one itself. Because although the abyss is seen as petty void, that void also has potential. You got to this point beyond form, beyond function, where there's pure potential for anything. Nothing exists yet, but potential for anything is there, but it's still conscious. I used to say that if you look into the void looks back. And so therefore, straight away, it starts to actually take form from your imagination. So be careful what you create. This is where you get ideas of things like the old ones, where the strange beings come out of people's unconscious, even their deepest, nastiest parts come out as some big, scary forms. People are creating stuff all the time about those realms. Things to realize then is like, is it useful? Yes, it can be useful if you understand that you can go there and create something totally entirely new, but you have to know what you're doing. Quite often people creating out of their deeper emotions, things that haven't integrated fully, their shadows. So beyond that, we have the abyss. Also, we have the causal plane. Causal plane is interesting itself. You can actually go there mentally in a way through the shamanic journeying, but it's real nature. It's beyond what we can see, what we can understand. It's beyond emotion even. But the forces of there, there's things you can relate to, which are not really emotional, things like expectation. Expectation is really an emotion. People are just trying to get it emotionally, but actually it's beyond that. It's a force which creates before there's even emotion. The expectation can create other emotions. If you expect something good, you feel, you know, happy emotions. If you expect something bad, you start feeling fear and all kinds of things. But expectation itself is not emotion. But it's a force of the causal plane, because this is where we're creating. Going to that world is also very useful. I do cover this one in the shamanic journeying courses. There's journeys to the upper world and then to the causal plane, and how to work with that. Beyond that, we have the abyss. The realms of the gods actually take on another form beyond the mythical, because they're that exist as pure energy. You see, even the void is created by something. We think the void is the source of everything, but actually, what really creates is beyond our kind of conception, beyond our ability to actually describe it. It's a-dimensional, indescribable. It's not rational in any way. It's just undefinable. Anything we can define is a creation. It's not the source of itself. Something creates the void. We create this idea of nothing, but actually that requires there to be nothing and something, two opposites of what we created. What's before that? It gets pretty mind-boggling when you go there. If you go too far, your head is going to explode. But basically, beyond that, you know, you go back to the source, the pure awareness, it's actually is so far beyond any of these things, it's going to be hard to understand. Mythical level is actually the safest one to work with at this time. Causal plane is useful as well, yeah, we can do that and work with magic. But they can also be many others in between you can describe, you know, because we can actually subdivide things as we like. Interesting to look at these systems like Kabbalah. The 10 spheres or stages of consciousness. You see how this works. You know, Malkuth is the physical plane. Esod is then the kind of astral plane, which also has the emotion, imagination, and so on. Then you've got the sphere of Neptus, which is Venus, it's all about the emotions. You've got Hod, which is about more the mind, Mercury. Then you've got the sun, the pure energy, radiance, and the will. You've got the Jupiter expansion. You've got Mars, which is more the violence. And you've got the kind of certain energy of Bina, which is then the kind of restriction. You've got Kokma, which is pure force, and so on. So it's like these are all different levels of consciousness as well, different levels of existence. They can be summed up by these spheres. But again, this is a system. Really, energy is so fluid. You can have infinite levels. Depends how you want to subdivide them.
You're talking about myths, but can the same things be found in fairy tales?
Yeah. See, fairy tale, again, any tale is really usually from a myth. Now, fairies are very real in their own plane, but also have their own mythology. They have their own beings, their own helpers. Different from ours. It's like same, but differently described. For instance, what we call angels, they're simply called shining ones. They don't see them as things with harps and wings and things. They've got their own story how they work, but these pure lights are beings of light and often sometimes just geometric shapes and fractal patterns that set up here, because they see them more clearly without this kind of symbolism attached to it. They call them shining ones. They also have their underworld beings. They don't see as angels or demons the way we do, but they do have other beings they work with, shining ones, their own ancient ones, and so on. And they have their own stories, so their queens were the kind of became almost the goddess images. Because they were very magical, well, they still are a very magical race, and when you really learn to master magic, you become immortal. The ancient ones are basically immortals. They've been here for thousands of years, and they become the masters of magic and the initiators, and they're seen as goddesses. You look at a lot of fairy myths, you know, they're talking about the goddesses are actually the ancient ones, the older fairies. It's become part of mythology, which too becomes a system of learning and expansion. See, the four cities they talk about in the fairy initiations, Murus, Phalius, Phineas, and Gorius, actually are very real in that world, the place you can go. The thing about the fairy world is there are different boundaries. The inner worlds can overlap because their relationship to time and space is different. You can go down the road and come to a place where the underworld is overlapping the physical world, and there you're hanging around. Well, people find it disturbing, so they try and push those different parts of the reality further away because their relationship to time and space is such that they can move space. They're things which you don't want to look at every day. They push more to the edges. So right to the quarters, you've got the city of initiation where the worlds are overlapping, where you can meet the ancient ones and training ones and so on. So there's lots of mythology about that. There's something real behind it too. If you're in the fairy realm, you just travel there and get initiated. When they've taught it to humans, obviously you have to learn the mythology to actually understand these things, to actually journey there in your unconscious in a way to actually trigger these powers. So mythology becomes very important. The stories that happened before to others, it's like it's happening to you in that kind of inner journey, in that myth. So you can travel to these places of initiation, and these different goddesses or these different beings all become a part of this empowerment. Because deities, they said that these are actually conduits of a certain type of energy function, an energy that wants to actually do something. Connecting to these goddesses is actually creating a conduit to these energies so you can use it. That's what magic's about.
Can you please talk about how to use myth with those various layers like causal plane and void?
In the void, it's not really a place of myths, it's gone beyond. What's going to be happening there, you'd be creating new myths out of the unconscious, out of the shadow, which is probably not in control of, it's not done very sensibly. The myths have all been created by magicians of the past, and probably even before we were human, are far more useful because they were created out of a function before we became human. So your consciousness is descended to these layers. When we've come into this form, we've become human. Before that, we're something else. Like, for instance, the same descending consciousness, if it stops in the ethers, might become a different being called the element. It might become a sylph if it's in fire. If it's in water, become an undine. If it's in earth, it become a gnome. If it's in, and so on. The same consciousness as us, but it stops a different place. Therefore, it's a different function, therefore a different form. Because at the root of pure awareness, we take on what function, the form, according to where we end up. So when we come into these mythical layers, these myths exist before we do. In a way, we've given them form now from our present imagination, but we had to come through those layers to get to where we are now. Therefore, they were created already in almost in preparation for what we want, what we need to survive and to fulfill our dreams. So if it's already a perfect system there because we created it on the way in. Now, the causal plane is where you do that creation. You can see that the causal plane is kind of a way station where you stop on the way to take a look at what you're going to create. Because coming from pure awareness to this is too much of a big shock. You stop somewhere halfway along the way and say, okay, here I'm creative, I've got all these powers, there's all the possibilities, now let's look what I'm going to create down there. That's what the core complaint's about. Now, of course, you can sit there and work with the gods, all these myths and things, because they are kind of tied up with these levels too. You can bring them in if you choose to. Thinking about the causal plane, you find your little way station there, which is actually your little laboratory where you do experimenting. You can bring in what you like. The deities can be there if you want them to. They won't be if you don't want them to. So in the end, when you're on the causal plane, you start building your own kind of little method of magic, your own personal little place, like you're in a temple. Use what you want. You can imagine things and put them down so they manifest. You can actually call different deities to add powers to this. Plus the energies of the causal plane itself. Things like value, expectation, imagination, desire, all things we need exist there. You absorb them and you can use them, you see. This is also a very useful tool because people don't know how do I expect things. If I need to expect something to create it, how can I expect? We go to the causal plane, it's full of expectation. Absorb it and just use it. So that's the use of the causal plane. It can mix very well with the myths because they also are all part of this in-between. We're creating potentials already to actually do something and manifest. Very close.
Thank you. I feel like my child is writing her own myths and taking other myths and altering them and writing her own stories. Can we write our own myths using these older myths? Can this help with our manifestations?
Oh, yes. You see, myths have a really big effect on where we're going. And not all myths are positive. You look at how many ended in disaster. It's not just the Bible story ending in Armageddon. You've got the Viking myths of actually ending in Ragnarok because, you know, similar to the whole Christian myth thing before the beginning from the original sin. In the Vikings myths, we were born of giant blood, therefore we're inherently evil, therefore we're going to fail. So you've got this kind of mythology going on. So sometimes we need to actually change these myths a bit, sort of what I'm talking about tomorrow. So sometimes rewriting it or writing an end to it is deciding where you're going. For instance, you look at this myth, ending in Ragnarok, actually, is this the end, or can you actually rewrite what happens after that? Okay, these got shattered, now let's build something new. Let's get these gods working together for a change instead of fighting each other. Let's see what we can create with all these potentials. So there's the potential of myth as well. You write the rest of the story.
Okay, so I'm going to go on to some non-topic related questions now. Some are related to what you have been talking about. You speak about all of us being one and everyone else being us, yet you have curses and killing mantras that you offer on your website. How do you use them if you are killing the other that you say really is us if we are one?
It's a bit like removing a tumour. Some things in your body have gone wrong. You want to get rid of them. It's very complex, you know. It's like, yes, it's very nice to know that all is one, but practically you've got to deal with it. If something's harming you, you've got to remove it. If something's gone wrong, you need to shift it quickly before it does you more harm. When you remove a tumour, that's you too. Part of your own cells, you know, gone wrong. It's, of course, it doesn't deal with the cause. And if you might remove a tumour, you still have to go back and deal with the cause or you grow another one. So you have to do deep work too. But sometimes the more short-term work involves removing stuff that's harmful.
Do you have any suggestions to make imagination stronger in order to make one's magic practice stronger, for example, Tanaga Dalam?
The Tanaga Dalam is not so much about imagination. It does get you to source, but not through imagination. Actually, the best thing for that, if you look at my course, is the High Magic course, because you actually travel through the imaginal realm. The only case to get to that point. The imaginal realm is another realm we come to on the way here. It's a place of wild, unharnessed creativity where imagination imagines itself. This imagination there far greater than ours. If you align to that, then imagination becomes extremely powerful. Apart from that, it's just letting yourself dream. So much we're told since a child, stop dreaming, you know, wake up and do your work and be serious and so on. So dreams take a back seat. Just remember to let yourself dream again. Daydream about things you want. Stop, you know, this is the first step up towards creating visualization. You have to dream again. Start relaxing, daydreaming, and thinking about things you can create. Things you enjoy, what you'd really like, you know, go into fantasy even. Although fantasy is just a new way of exercising the imagination rather than creating. It's, you know, it's a powerful tool for sharpening it. This is why we have fantasy. So you look at fantasy, this is another area. All fantasies are not necessarily there to be manifested, but they do stretch your imagination. They play with it. And the imagination, being a powerful tool, does need sharpening a bit. So let yourself fantasize and imagine and daydream and everything. Don't think it's a waste of time, you know, because your imagination is playing and waking up and stretching.
I love that. Next question. Have you interacted with the form of Kali, that is Kali Krishna? They are seen as one and the same in parts of India. I am drawn to that form.
They are. You see, even in the Kali, in the Chalisa, her, you know, the 40th verse song, it talks about when she's finished killing, her sword turns into a fluid, she becomes Krishna. It shows how the different stages you go through when things are changing. See, all of them are really one. The word Deva actually means attribute. They're not really separate attributes of the source of this one power. Go through different term functions. So they're all one, really, and it changes according to what it's doing. At one moment, she's destroying because there's things that need removing. There's things that are wrong, that are harmful for you. She destroys them all. When that's finished, she does something else. She then says to Krishna, everything's back in the love of music and all nice things again. So it's about that transition between the destruction and then going back to the celebration and beauty and love and music and all those things. What are you destroying for? That's an important point. If you're in destruction and without actual purpose, or what you're actually doing this for. Reminds you of something that Winston Churchill said during the war, when he was during the war, he's actually putting money into art. And then shortly he spent it on defence or whatever. He says, well, what are we fighting for? So it's actually that question, even when you're struggling, you've got things to destroy. It's actually, okay, what are you fighting for? What are you going to create? How are you going to enjoy yourself? You know, when you're going to celebrate and feel the love and the music and all the beauty and all the wonderful things, you know, you start seeing life as that. But to get there, you really, really, really realize you've got to actually destroy certain things that are in the way. Get rid of the corruption, all the kind of blockages, all the whatever's stopping you, or your negativity.
That is exactly the philosophy that I use when I'm coaching my clients. You have to create the dream first, but otherwise, when it gets tough, there's nothing to keep you going.
Exactly.
Moving on. Thank you very much. This puzzles me. When I and others put attention on the, I can't say it, authoritarianism that has and is going on globally, and there is a dismayed feeling about it. Is that feeling creative in that it assists in creating more of the same, as in where attention goes, energy flows? It's puzzling, as these things were not seen for so long by many, and so they grew.
Well, there is that used. You see, quite often what's going on is simply to trigger certain emotions, so I can use them. See, there are magicians running all this. The emotion they can generate in the crowds can be shaped, used to actually create what they want and create the imprisonment. In order to create this kind of control, they've got to create fear. They can create this fear of the feelings of restriction. All the things are created on the astral first. Everything is done first on the emotional level. So yes, if you respond to them that way they expect you to, you'll be actually falling into their plan. The feelings you have at first are not necessarily the cause, though, because it's what you do with them. They're a response that something is wrong. You feel bad because this is all wrong. You don't want it. It doesn't fit with your plan. So we have to go back to the discreation. And also it means knowing what you want. See, even when people fight the present system, it doesn't get anywhere because they haven't got time to replace it with. Things only grow when actually a new system makes the old one obsolete. Otherwise, it becomes part of the counterculture, which is actually part of the structure. Every system has some countercultures in place, which are actually part of the whole mechanism of how things work. If you're fighting it, that's usually become part of that. So you do have to actually have the better system ready to replace that. That has to be there first. Create the best to make the old one obsolete, but at the same time, start discreating all those situations which link to your emotions. So when you discreate, you go into the emotion, remember? You feel the restriction, you feel the frustration, the anger, whatever you feel. You have to go through that to discreate it. Then you've got more power to change it. And of course, if you read my more recent blog about harnessing crisis, you can take the energy of other people's crisis that's going on there and use that to create what you want as well to help change the world. There's loads of potential if you want to use it right. But yes, the first step is to actually look at your own emotions here, start directing them properly. Discreate what you don't want. Put the energy to what you do want.
Going back to deities, if I reach out to Carly, she comes, but I get the impression that she is very responsive, and then I doubt it because I've done so much work with you and assume it's the connection that brings Carly in. Anything to say about that?
It starts that way, but but you're building it. So you have first to help. I give the picture, I give the connection so it comes easily. But then you build it yourself for your own practice. It becomes personal. It is your own link. After all, you don't need me. It is actually you, yes. You're building your own connection. And the part of that is to actually build that faith by having that connection. The more you do it, the more you learn to trust in Carly, the more you trust your own connection with her. It comes with time. Just keep going.
I have a genuine Ush-Abti, I think that's how you say it, tomb guardian, with very little knowledge. It's always felt powerful. Any thoughts, Peter?
What's that one? The general what?
Ush-Abti.
Ush-Abti, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's an Egyptian figure, yeah. Yeah, if it's there, it's quite often you have a past life link to it. Just work with it, it's there. It's how it starts. I mean, sometimes it happens in dreams. I know in me, but also in my children, I've noticed that the Egyptian myth came very strong in dreams. I used to have nightmares as a child, and it's didn't know what they were at the time, but they used to realize there's a sphinx there. They used to paralyze me because the energy was so strong that I'd come to the sphinx and I couldn't move, and they used to scare me. And I was first talking to my daughter about underworld journeying. She's about 6 or 7, and she said, I do that every night. She actually described who she meets down there, which are things like a cat being, a jackal-like being. She's describing Egyptian deities. People do have natural connections from past lives and so on, or through their genes. If it's there, work with it. It's a connection just to let it in.
How powerful are the Shimigami spirits for protection against vampire magic?
They're one of the best against vampires because they actively hunt them. See, many of the beings you work with here, they can be protective, but the thing is, in that particular mythology, you've got things which hunt vampires. In the Japanese mythology here. Now, it's very strong there because in the graveyard they all have a Shinigami as a guardian of that graveyard, in the typical Shinto graveyard. So it's very strong in their culture. And these Shinigami do actually look after the dead, and they kill what they call the empties, the soulless beings which are feeding on the others, actually vampires. So their job there is to actually hunt vampires, because they're so tailor-made for the job in their mythology. It's a very good one. They're perfect for the job.
Sorry, I was just reading the next question. It's a bit of a long one, so bear with me. I've had dreams on rare occasions spanning 20 years with Egyptian deities and symbols. Recently, after a healing session, I seemed to be hearing several Egyptian deities introduce themselves and found myself writing automatically. This also came after doing a ritual to Sekhmet to help discreate egregores of the global agenda from Take Your Power Back 2. Other examples, I was let down by a hairdresser. She heard an Egyptian deity say this one when she was looking for new ones, and that hairdresser has been amazing with her hair loss problems. Also something to do with helping bad tenants who hadn't paid rent. I'm not sure if this was me, but guess I'm surprised that the Egyptian theme seems to have sprung to life. So whilst I didn't know there was this course, I'm suddenly considering it. Am I on the right track with all of this?
Oh, yeah. If they're coming to you, then work with them. They're there. They're already speaking to you, helping you. So it's good to actually learn to work with them more and really develop that magic.
Who are the Bedouins you mentioned in the video announcing the new course? Is their tradition connected with your dragon tradition?
No, it's different. Bedouin are actually basically in Arabic. In Egypt, Arabia, is a place like that. Those kind of people live in the desert. Now, these days, it's all Islam, but they still have the oldest tradition. I was initiated by Bedouin long ago. Interesting story there. I was living in Glasgow at the time. I was still quite young. But it was an archaeologist who came to me to actually hire me as a psychic. There's a clairvoyant to find his hidden temple. Because a lot of the things I have to excavate, they went under the desert, and we knew it should be somewhere. And he gave me a picture of the desert, and I had to go and find it for him. When we got there, Bedouin women turned up and didn't want to excavate it because it says their holy land. See, what happens when they excavate a temple, then suddenly it's all touristy and they can't go there anymore. Islam's taken over, you can't do this here anymore, it's now a tourist thing, and you can't do your magic. So quite often they don't want these things to be excavated. They're using it there where nobody knows about it. And actually the Bedouin men didn't even know about it. This is the women doing this one. It was the Temple of Ishtar, I found. So anyway, we had an agreement with them. They would initiate us if we didn't excavate. Couldn't do it there because it wasn't the right place, but they had contacts in Egypt where they had other people to give me initiation there. So it's all been done through Bedouin families. They're still connected. They're all connected all over. Even when we go to do the trips to Egypt, you know, it's a Bedouin leader who takes us around. He's got family in all the temples. You know, it's all big, the temple thing. He can get into the places where we need to go, where nobody else can go. So the Bedouin, basically, they're Arab people. They're very old culture. Well, they have to embrace Islam now. They have their old knowledge too. They still work with the Egyptian.
We are very quickly running out of time. I will ask one more question and then we will need to conclude because you have to move on to your workshop. In contrast to Carly, I reached out to Lilith using the mantra you gave and I didn't feel like I got a response. If I use Vedic astrology, Shiva is supposed to be the deity I work with. The prayer you gave a while back to get a response from our deity in our dreams, Thoth and Ra came to me. Then a few days later, Shiva was in my dream and I even woke myself up chanting the mantra. I'm not sure what that's meant to say. Do I work with all these deities or just choose?
No, for me, they've all turned up. They're with you. They all have different functions, so therefore work with them all. They're useful for different things, different times of your life. So work with all three. Always work with whoever turns up when you do this.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Peter, for all of your knowledge, all of your advice and everything that you always give. We are at the hour. So just to let everybody know that the links have been put in the chat for you once again. If you want to join us on the potions workshop that is going to start in 30 minutes and you're not a member, you can still come and join us. If you want to come and join us and you are a member, please make sure you've registered so that you get the link so that you can come and join us. Remember, you don't need to bring anything along, just yourself and the handout, and Peter will be doing everything else. If your question that you put in the chat was not asked, please do put it in the MeWe group and I'll get Peter to go over to there and answer it for you there. Otherwise, everybody, thank you so much for your interaction today, for your being with us today. And I know I spent a long time giving many, many announcements at the beginning of the call. So lots of stuff coming up. Watch out for those two webinars coming up at the weekend. Manifestation. What is it? The manifestation.
Masterclass.
Thank you. I could think. I knew it began with M. The manifestation masterclass and the Thailand Q&A next weekend. Peter's going to Holland. Peter's going to Germany. You can come to Thailand. Let's all manifest our dreams of wonderful global holidays with coconuts and palm trees and everything else that we want. I live that. And that's it, I think. Oh, and Egyptian magic. You've got 3 days to grab that early bird. 3 days until Tuesday. So please do take advantage of that and let's get some wonderful magic happening in all of our lives. Will we automatically get the email for the manifestation class? I don't know, Stefan, is the answer to that. Watch out, please, and then you'll see.
We'll put a link up somewhere anyway.
Yes. Is the manifestation webinar going to be recorded for those that can't participate?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's a free one. Yeah, everyone can have it. Everyone can have it. So interesting and helpful. Yes, it very much was. Thank you so much, everybody. Yes, we look forward to seeing you next month. Next month.
Next week.
Oh, next week, yes. Next month. And then Peter will be talking about on the workshops next week how to deal with your ancestors. Your little troublesome and your goody ancestors, because we've got both, right? Good ones and troublesome ones. All right, my loves, thank you so much. See you all in April if we don't see you next weekend. Take care, everybody. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay.